T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I think at some point, when you feel comfortable with what you're receiving, you pull the trigger. Sometimes you wait too long and things, you know, move on. Trades are hard. I mean, when you're a part of them and they pop up and you're having those conversations, they're not comfortable conversations, especially when you're moving on from a player. So, you know, the longer that you're talking about it and thinking about it, you can start to sway a little bit. So when we hit in a position where I was comfortable, we were good with it.
Ryan Poles, your Bears general manager, talking about trading his number one pick to the Carolina Panthers, giving him seemingly everything he wanted. DJ Moore, number 9 pick overall. They swapped ones this year, number 61 this year, a 2024 first, and a 2025 second. Joining me on the Score Hotline is Josh Schrock of NBC Sports Chicago. The Score Hotline is presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Josh, thanks for joining me today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So you had written a piece that it looked like a really good trade, and the idea of DJ Moore coming to the Bears would further weaken whatever that rookie quarterback was going to have, for which the Panthers made the trade. And then you looked at what the Panthers were doing, that maybe the draft pick Ryan Poles gets next year won't suck as much. So share with the class what you said.
Yeah. Like you said, I think in general, the idea of taking Carolina's only good offensive weapon away from a rookie quarterback is a pretty good move when you're betting against Carolina this season, even in a weak division. But the Panthers, I mean, when Ryan Poles made the trade, their supporting cast was Chuba Hubbard at running back and Terrace Marshall and LaVisca Chenault, the receiver, which is pretty bad. And they went out and signed Miles Sanders, who's probably the best back on the market, and then added Adam Thielen and DJ Chark, who, I mean, they're not huge needle movers, but they're solid veterans. And the NFC South is so bad. I mean, the Falcons are going to be terrible again. The Bucks are rebuilding, so that at least gives the Panthers a pretty good shot of competing for a bad division. And then you look at the Bucks; they won it last year at 8-9. That picks at 18. So, I mean, there's a shot if the Panthers don't mess up the evaluation of the quarterback that they go 9-8, and the Bears probably get a pick in the 18-20 range.
Do you think it was a bad deal, or you're just sort of doping out the way you think it won't be as great as a top 10 pick?
Yeah. No, I think overall, if you take a big view of it, it's a good deal. You got, you know, 3 top 60 picks and an elite wide receiver. I don't really like Ryan Poles coming out and saying, you know, I thought I could have done something historic, but then I didn't. It's like, okay, well, whatever there. But overall, I think it's a really good deal. It just might not end up being, you know, the fleecing that we thought it could be. But we'll see.
Josh Schrock is my guest. He's a Bears insider for NBC Sports Chicago. We're talking Bears football here on The Score. I don't know what might be historic. What do you speculate? How historic could he be talking?
Yeah, I think he's just kind of speculating that his initial plan, I think, was trading down to 2 with the Texans for an extra 1 and then flipping 2-9 with the Panthers. But the Cardinals being at 3 kind of threw a wrench in that, because, I mean, they're looking to trade down, so the Panthers could have theoretically just traded up with the Cardinals, and then the Bears would have been stuck at 2 looking for another trade partner. And once DJ Moore's on the table, you kind of just, I guess, wash your hands of the extra first-round pick you think you could get and take a deal you really like. And they got Justin Fields, a weapon that he really needs. So it's a good deal, just maybe not the great one that Ryan Poles is looking for.
Well, I think what he did was he ended up with enough draft capital if he wanted to trade up, if there was somebody there.
Right.
And
for sure,
there's much speculation about what they would do at 9. So let's play this game, Josh.
Yeah.
Let's play what if. What if they hold on to that draft pick and they're at 9? Who would you ideally draft if you were Ryan Poles?
Yeah, I think given what they did and didn't do in free agency, It's probably got to either be an offensive tackle or a defensive tackle. I think Will Anderson and Tyree Wilson are going to be gone. So you're probably looking at, what do they get from Jalen Carter if he's available when they host him for an interview? Does he show contrition and they say, okay, look, it's a 21-year-old kid who had some poor decisions, but it's nothing bad, and he's a good kid, and he's a hard worker, and he loves football, and he's probably the best talent in this class, and if he falls to 9, he fits what we want? Or do they say, hey, at 9, we can't really take a gamble on a guy with character issues, quote-unquote, and we'll take a guy like Paris Johnson, who's a really good left tackle out of Ohio State, and just check that box for the next 10 years.
Okay, so we saw last year when Ryan Poles brought in players, 3 of them got arrested. So yep. He apparently likes guys who were pre-arrested, and that's the way Jalen Carter comes. Right. What do you believe is Ryan Poles' toleration level for police activity with people to whom he's paying McCaskey money?
Yeah, I mean that's an interesting point that we've kind of talked about a few times on the Under Center podcast. Three guys who were arrested last offseason who weren't star players. I mean, David Moore didn't even make the roster, and the Bears didn't do any sort of discipline. I mean, they could have cut one or two of them to send a message, and they didn't. So I think they have a tolerance if they view it as not a pattern of bad activity, and the transgressions are not, quote unquote, that bad. I mean, I guess getting stoned and falling asleep in a Taco Bell drive-thru with a couple guns is not bad on the Bears' radar. So there's that. So I think the tolerance level is probably dependent on the transgression and I guess what they hear from the player after it happens. But I thought last year they could have sent a message and cut maybe a guy like Matt Adams, who was a depth linebacker who got a weapons charge, or David Moore, who didn't even make the roster. But they seem to have a higher bar than some organizations.
Are they doing that so they're attractive to other free agents? Hey, we'll protect you even though you're a criminal.
No, I don't think so. I think they just I don't know, they didn't have a lot of options last year roster wise, and I guess I think from their point of view it wasn't they weren't bad enough penalties to warrant cutting guys they thought could help a team that went 3-14.
Josh Rock is my guest. He's a Bears insider for NBC Sports Chicago, talking Bears here on The Score, Saturday Suckage. I'm Stevie Suckage. That's my broadcast name. So Josh, the story of Ryan Poles bringing Justin Fields into his office, say, here's our plan. Let's have we're going to have a come to Jesus talk about all this. This is what I want to do. And if Jalen Carter, the risk is there. Mm-hmm. And if the Ohio State tackle, the Northwestern tackle is there, does he have to make good on what we think he might have promised Justin Fields by drafting one of the tackles?
I don't know if he has to make good on what he promised, but I think, all things being equal now with Jalen Carter's, with the arrest and the question marks. And I think a big thing for the Bears also is the question about whether or not Jalen Carter loves football. I think it's pretty hard to pound the table about the hits principle and, we're going to play hard and run hard and do all this for a guy who may or may not love playing football and, didn't play a lot of snaps at Georgia because he got tired. And I think if you're betting 2023 has to be a year where Justin takes a big leap as a passer, the protection just has to be better. And I think all things being equal, it's just better to use that pick on a left tackle who's got a really high ceiling and no question marks than a guy who's supremely talented, Jalen Carter, but there are some questions.
So it's almost as though he has to choose one. He has to give the rose. Like Ryan Poles is the bachelor. And there's his quarterback who needs protection, and there's his coach who needs a defensive tackle to make everything worse. So who does Ryan Poles owe the rose to more, his coach or his quarterback, Josh?
Probably his coach, considering he didn't draft Justin, and he's certainly still able to move on from Justin next offseason. If Justin doesn't take a leap, they're going to have 2 first-round picks, so they could move up and draft a quarterback high if they feel that's necessary. And I think that what you saw in free agency with the linebacker signings is that Matt Eberflus has a big, big influence on the personnel decisions. And if Matt Eberflus wants Jalen Carter and says, this is the engine of my defense, I mean, as long as Jalen Carter aces the team interviews that he has coming up, they might just pull the trigger on that one.
Can they put an ankle bracelet on Jalen Carter?
I don't think so, but they might have to put like a no racing clause in the contract.
Wow, that's really something. Josh Rock is my guest. He's a Bears insider for NBC Sports Chicago and part of the Under Center podcast. And I know it's a small sample size, but and I think the trade what Ryan Poles did with the trade and trying to do something historic might have required going to the draft and being on the clock and all of that. Mm-hmm. And I think what he wanted to do was define free agency for himself, having an idea of where he could spend his draft choices, giving himself options and draft capital for which to do it. And I agreed with that. If whether that was his reasoning or not, whether in his heart of hearts he wanted to, I want to know where I have to go with this. In a small sample size of a year, between free agency and the draft and managing a roster and trades, Chase Claypool comes to mind as just a mess. What has Ryan Poles shown you that he can do well that you trust him to do? And what's the biggest red flag, the reddest of flags?
I mean, I think what he's done well is he's been really disciplined, and he seems to understand that this is going to be a lengthy rebuild. I mean, he could have gone out and spent all the money immediately this offseason and plugged a lot of holes, and he chose to be a little more disciplined than probably I would have been. But I think that shows he's cautious. So, I mean, that's a good thing. I don't really know about the talent evaluation. I mean, the Chase Claypool trade is kind of a blemish. The Velus Jones pick doesn't look great. I mean, Kyler Gordon and Jaquan Brisker are really good, and maybe he found a gem in Braxton Jones. So I guess the jury's out there, I think. I think the big question mark is just the free agency decisions, the plan is kind of murky. I know they wanted Mike McGlinchey and they didn't get him, but not pivoting to Orlando Brown just because he's not a great zone run blocker is questionable to me, just because he got a really reasonable contract from the Bengals and the Bears pass blocking is so bad. I mean, Orlando Brown would have made a big difference. So I think Ryan Poles is his stubbornness is probably a big issue for me. But I think this is going to be a big draft because we're going to find out a lot about his evaluation that we didn't find out last year.
Josh, we have several texters that are concerned about you.
About me?
Yes. We don't know. I don't know if we need to call 911 or if you're on your Peloton while you're doing this interview. Or they're worried about your breathing. Why you sound out of breath? And it might be the fear. You might be terrified that Saturday suckage might be contagious. Can you reassure our texters and our listeners that you're okay?
Yeah. I'm just a little. I've been under the weather this week, but I'm doing better.
Oh, this is good then.
Yes. Okay. Yes, I'm feeling better. Yes.
I'll ask you one last question because it's bothered me, and I've asked all our Bears guests this. When you see Luke Getsy come down from Green Bay and they bring a Green Bay wide receiver, somebody who understands the plan, and you know what Aaron Rodgers does well and what he doesn't do well, I'm not talking puking or going into these cone of silence, cone of darkness. But one thing they used to just aggravate the crap out of me watching the Bears, unable to defend Aaron Rodgers throwing a simple slant pass. And I don't know if Luke Getsy called even one. Can Luke Getsy not call them? Does Aaron Rodgers have a patent on them? Does Justin Fields have problems throwing it? Do they have receivers who can't execute it and get open? Do you have answers to any of those questions?
I think it's just about a bigger problem with the Bears' pass game. I mean, the receivers struggled to get open. The blocking wasn't good. Justin's talked about how he needs to be better at those short passes, the screens, the slants, the swings, has to take the layups. I think it was a culmination of things. And Luke Getsy, he was a first-time play caller. He got a lot of flowers for figuring out that Justin was mobile and could run, and that probably took way longer than it should have, but then he didn't really evolve the offense past that. So that's going to be a big question going forward is how he takes the next leap as well. I think DJ Moore is going to help them a lot in that intermediate range. So I expect the passing game to get better, and I expect more slants and more things like that, because the passing game was pretty elementary route-wise, and and Justin just wasn't as accurate as he needed to be.
Will they stop the game and send the ball to Canton if Justin Fields completes a slant pass?
I think so. Yeah. One-way ticket.
Then it's good. You be there and you'll document it, and then we'll come on and talk about it. Josh,
absolutely.
I appreciate you coming on under the weather, and I hope you get better. If we need to send over some chicken soup, let me know. We'll send that over and whatever else you might need. But thank you for coming on.
No problem. Anytime.
All right. That's Josh Schrock, NBC Sports Chicago, Bears Insider. I appreciate that, Texters. I appreciate you being concerned about our guest. I was too, and as long as we were all the same, I wanted to make sure that we got Josh whatever. If he needed 911 call, we certainly got phones around here. We can do that. But we give him points for being a trooper, for coming on that way. The Tech Zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. Tech Zone number 312-644-6767. That'll get you to the Scores listener line. The Scores listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Take a break. Baseball season's, when we come back, baseball season. It's going to be baseball season. And Major League Baseball, coming out of the glorious, just glorious World Baseball Classic, made sure that it basically pulled the Blackhawks. Showed how they could step on some appendage or another, how they could just soil the bed after that. And it turns out Major League Baseball hates kids. And I also came across a stat that knocked me out, and maybe it will knock you out, but I need some help with my math. It's about Albert Pujols and the Cubs, and I need help with my math. So listen up, people. Saturday suckage. I suck at math. Of course, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Use the left-hander. Notice how quiet it is again. Swinging a deep drive to left. Back is half. I don't believe it. A long home run for Albert Pujols. And the Cardinals lead 2-0. That ball cleared the bullpen and landed up in the seats behind the bullpen. About a 440-foot blast.
Highlight, low light, despair, courtesy of Pat Hughes, Hall of Fame broadcaster. Heard right here on The Score. That's us, WSCR. 670 The Score. Cubs, your home for Cubs baseball, Cubs spring training. Cubs spring training today. Cubs spring training on The Score is sponsored by Sloan, official water efficiency partner of the Chicago Cubs. We pulled that home run. He did that on September 4th. Albert Pujols did. Because it reflects, it leads me into a remarkable thing. Baseball is all about numbers, and you mix baseball and analytics and StatCast and everything, and you get something like this. Jeremy Frank, some of you may remember, he was a guest on the show on Saturday Suckage. He has the Twitter site, the Twitter account at MLB Random Stats. He was a student at Purdue. He organized a lot of the analytics conferences there. He was a summer intern for the dreaded, evil, cheating Houston Astros. He's now working for the Cubs. And he had tweeted this out. Albert Pujols' average home run trot over the years, tracked by StatCast, is 26 seconds. This is where I need your help. Suckage years. So extrapolated over his career, writes Jeremy Frank, Pujols has spent just over 5 hours of his life running the bases just for home runs. 5 hours of his life running the bases just for home runs at 26 seconds a circuit. So now, it seemed like the smart thing to do. Pujols has hit 59 career homers, had hit 59 career homers against the Cubs. So if I did this right, and remember, I became a writer because I hate math, then Pujols has spent 26 minutes circling the bases on home runs against the Cubs alone. Now, here's how I did it. I could be wrong, but this is what I did. Here's my equation. 59 homers times 26 seconds divided by 60. Did I do that right? Homers times 20. So it took them 26 seconds 59 times and then divide by 60. I have no idea if that's right or not. Anyways, it came up with 25.56. I rounded up. So that's where I got 26 minutes. Am I right? Am I wrong? But the idea, it really feel like Pujols was circling the bases for 5 hours against the Cubs, because that's all he did was hit home runs against the Cubs. But imagine that. 26 minutes of his life was spent circling the bases on home runs against the Cubs. If I did that wrong, please let me know. By the way, Jeremy Frank, we tried to get him on. He's working for the Cubs. He did not want to join us. As an intern, I wonder if he gets a World Series ring. Does he get a World Series ring from the Astros? He was a summer intern there, and the Cubs hired him. He was phenomenal when he was on the air with Mark Grody and I. Anyways, that was the math. And if you watched the World Baseball Classic, and it was just an unbelievable thing of, came down to two Angels teammates playing for different countries, Ohtani against Trout. If this were a Hollywood script, it would be thrown back. This is just, look, this is so sweet and treacly, you could get diabetes from it. But there it was. It happened in real life. And baseball has a chance to capitalize on this. I mean, capitalize. Oh, my God, look at all the interest in spring training, but here we go. And they love it, and here's this World Baseball Classic, and it's no different than the Olympics. It's easy to get excited about the Olympics and the World Baseball Classic. It's 2 weeks. Country versus country. Playing for all that pride and all of that, and every game matters and all that. Baseball, not every game matters. They want to tell you it does, but there's 162. Eventually, they all add up. You got to count for all of them, but you're never going to get that excitement because it's 2 or 3 weeks. And baseball faces the same problems the NHL did when the United States, when Herb Brooks's band of snot-nosed college-age kids beat the Soviets. They were Soviets back then. Beat the Soviets. And as much as I love Kurt Russell's speech as Herb Brooks, and I would want to play that, I'm not going to do it right now. But coming out of that, the NHL had no idea what to do, how to market it, how to take advantage of it. In fact, it was so bad, Jack O'Callaghan, who was drafted by the Blackhawks, came off that team. If you saw the movie Miracle, he had a bigger Jack, admits that the camera loved the actor playing Jack, got a bigger role in the movie than he really had with the team. But Jack was a respected member of the Miracle team and certainly a beloved member of in the media. Jack's terrific. I love Jack. He's given me a ton of time, and I always have questions about that team. What happened? Here is a guy coming off the Miracle on Ice. He comes to the Blackhawks. There is a press conference for Jack O'Callaghan. He's sitting there in a Blackhawks hat and jacket, answering questions. Newest Blackhawk. Press conference ends. Louis Varga, the trainer. Hey, kid, I need the hat and the jacket back. I said, Jack, you're kidding. He goes, no. The Blackhawks, the penurious Blackhawks, were asking this member of the Miracle on Ice team to give back his Blackhawk jacket and his Blackhawk hat because that's the way the Hawks do things. And the NHL would be similarly inept. I'm not sure what baseball does here, but what baseball turned out to do in tweaking its rules, these new rules that were somewhat exciting, right? You get faster games. You force players to react quicker, move along. And then you find out baseball hates kids. There was a clause in the memo about new rules and tweaks to the rules that reads like this. Bat boys and girls are to meet with a visiting team before each series to discuss equipment preferences, and MLB will monitor, quote, the performance, end quote, of bat boys and girls throughout the season. The league might ask for a bat boy or girl to be replaced if they're contributing to game delays. So if a bat boy or bat girl gets back to the dugout in 6 seconds instead of four, you're fired. You're going to make a 12-year-old cry? Are you going to have bat boy boot camp? I just can't get over this. That you're coming off, you're baseball, you're coming off the greatest excitement you could imagine. And it's not even really yours. It's the World Baseball Classic. It's not Major League Baseball, but Major League players are there. And what is the news that comes out of that? Well, you hate kids. If a kid requires additional time to get off the field, the umpire will waive any game pace penalties, which is fine, but then the kid could get fired. If a kid gets fired, don't go to baseball games. That's it. Tell MLB you're not paying for the tickets. I'm stunned, and yet I shouldn't be stunned that there's that kind of stupidity in whatever Rob Manfred's running. You just can't do this. How could you do this to a kid? How could you hold up a kid like this? I understand you want baseball games to move around. If it's an extra 5 seconds, you're going to fire a kid? You're going to be that kind of bad guy in the name of pace of play? Baseball just like the NHL, you can't fix stupid. And this is what baseball comes out of the World Baseball Classic with. We're going to fire kids. We're going to replace them if they're not doing their job. This is bat boy boot camp. Okay, there you go. MLB at its dumbest. I'm Steve Rosenblum. We're going to take a break on Saturday Suckage. When we come back, two more number one seeds went down. Your brackets are broken. Everyone's brackets are broken. Everyone's brackets suck, but it's a greatest part of March Schadenfreude that Alabama was one of them. They can take their despicable story home, and we will continue on with, who knows, San Diego State playing for the championship, Florida Atlantic playing for the NCAA title, Creighton, go you Blue Jays. We'll talk to Ryan Horvath, BetMGM tonight. We'll talk about betting opportunities in a historic Elite Eight. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Miller will hoist, and that is it. San Diego State has done it for the first time in school history. They're going to the Elite Eight.
Tonight belongs to Miami. The Hurricanes take out the one seed and advance to the Elite Eight for the second straight year.
Highlights, courtesy of CBS and TBS, and especially despicable Alabama Crimson Tide going down the way it did. As Dan Bernstein tweeted out, wow, Alabama was just in the wrong place, the wrong time, which is just so perfectly said. And the kind of NCAA Schadenfreude that is going on, the hate watching that was going on, and how it was rewarded is where we are now. That's the end of Alabama, the end of Houston, the end of the last two number one seeds. This will be the first Elite Eight in history without at least one number one seed. How do you bet that, Ryan Horvitt?
Yeah, that's a great question. Actually, you know what? I've done pretty well. I had San Diego State last night, and we took them on the money line, plus 280 as well. I just thought that was a bad matchup for Alabama. And Alabama, I mean, in the SEC tournament, they looked really good. But they just really didn't put it all together offensively. You know, Brandon Miller just didn't look like himself. And I'm with you. It's good to see them go. I do kind of feel bad for Houston, though, and Kelvin Sampson, just because, you know, they obviously don't play in the strongest conference. And every year, well, the last couple of years, you know, they've been a one seed and they just can't get the job done. And last night, that was just a mess. So I keep joking around that tonight really is the national championship game. You know, UConn and Gonzaga, I think, is going to be a great game. And right now, those are the two best teams. Actually, you know, Texas is right now, they've been the best team in the nation since February. For some reason, nobody's talking about them. And it's actually a pretty good story because Chris Beard gets fired from the program. Somehow, typical SEC, he already has a job at Ole Miss. But they haven't skipped a beat. They've only lost two games since February 14th. Both of those games were on the road against, I believe, TCU and Baylor. And in that span, they beat Kansas twice, which never happens. And they still weren't getting any respect even last or 2 weeks ago when they played in the Big 12 championship game. They were 3.5-point underdogs. They won by 20. And they continued to just beat teams up. And they're one of the only teams in the country that's top 15 offensively and defensively as far as efficiency. So I really like Texas. But this Gonzaga-UConn game tonight is going to be really good.
Texas is the highest seed left. It's the only number two seed, and number two is the highest seed left. What does the fact there's no number one seed and the fact that it's been so that kind of craziness, does it change the way you would analyze it, put money down, or is it simply game to game, matchup, and style versus style?
Yeah, I mean, I've taken, like, as far as some different, like, money line underdogs, that's something I usually don't get out of hand with, you know, because, you know, we usually see an upset or two, a couple upsets in the first two rounds. But this is the first time in tournament history we don't have a one seed. So, you know, we just never see this. Usually talent ultimately wins out in the final four. You know, we get a couple one seeds, a two seed, like you said, a three seed. But right now it's tough to call. And the reason is because some of these smaller conference schools, like Conference USA, for example, did not get enough respect this year. Instead, we talked about the Big Ten, which in typical fashion, everybody bowed out pretty early, except for Michigan State. You know, we talked about the Mountain West, which, I mean, you know, they do still have San Diego State left. But man, like some of these smaller conferences, these schools are really good. Florida Atlantic, for example, I really like them tonight. I took them on the money line. And it's crazy because they shoot the three, like they rely on the three ball. They shoot at 42% of their offensive possessions. And they're the smallest team in the tournament. They're the fifth smallest team, I believe, to make the tournament in NCAA history. So on paper, you know, going against Tennessee, they should have got killed on the glass because we saw what Tennessee did against Duke. They were just so physical. Somehow Florida Atlantic, who I believe has one guy over 6'8", won the rebound battle against Tennessee. So it just doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. So I've just kind of been taking the shot with some underdogs and I got, you know, just kind of finding these teams that are just, you know, have been really hot all season long. They didn't just get hot the last month or two of the season. Florida Atlantic, for example, is a 32-win team. So I really like them. It's hard to bet against Kansas State, though, because they're also a really fun story.
Ryan Horvitt is my guest, co-host of BetMGM Tonight. We're talking NCAA tournament and where you can make some money, where you can find it. He's joining me on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. So you really like the UConn-Gonzaga game as a game. You would seem to indicate you thought those were the two best teams left, or is that just the best game left? Because I'd have a hard time betting against the Beaches, San Diego State and Miami of Florida, given what's gone on so far. And I know you probably know there's probably not an analysis for beach communities, but UConn-Gonzaga, are those the two best teams left, or is that just the best game, and what are you feeling tonight?
I think other than Texas, those are the two best teams left. And UConn right now is the scariest team because of how they're winning these games. I mean, they're dominating teams in the post. They have the rebound advantage in every single game so far in the tournament. And there's really no way to stop them because if you double them down in the post, they're hitting 45% of their threes right now. they're also really good defensively. The reason I haven't trusted them in the past has been because of Danny Hurley. But I don't even think he could screw this up because the talent's there. This team's so damn good. And then Gonzaga, nobody gave them a chance really this year because they don't have the backcourt play. They don't have the guard play that they've had the last couple of years. But, man, all of a sudden now they're playing their best basketball. The problem with them, they just don't play any defense. I thought they were going to get blown out. It was looking that way against UCLA. They were down 11, you know, in the first half in that game, just not playing any defense. But Drew Timmy was so good, and he's been there for 7 years, it seems. So, I mean, there's just really no way to stop him in the post. So I think these are the two best teams other than Texas. And I like UConn in the game, but as far as betting the game, this is one where I'll probably look to live bet it because somebody's probably going to go up in the first half, and sometimes you'll see the market overreact a little bit. Sometimes I don't think there's a whole lot of value betting a game right now. Like you said, I mean, this tournament's so crazy. Anything can happen. And these spreads are so tight, 2, 2.5 points. Sometimes if you just wait, you could live bet and you could get a team as a 6, 6.5 point underdog. So my hope would be maybe Gonzaga goes down big again and we could get them as a 7, 7.5 point underdog. And I could just bet them live because there's a little bit more value, obviously. I think this game's going to come down to the wire. I think it's going to be a final possession game. It's really tough to call. I lean UConn, though, just because they're the better defensive team.
Has San Diego State, my guest is Ryan Horvath, BetMGM tonight. We're talking betting the NCAA tournament. Has San Diego State traditionally provided, or no, I'm sorry, not traditionally, this year, the way they can rally or the way they can shut you down defensively, they seem like a solid second half bet if you're talking about in-game betting. Have they been reliable in that way? Is that a bet you would look to make?
Yeah. I mean, they go down in games. If they do go down in games, I'll look to live bet them. Same thing, second half, just because of the adjustments that they're able to make. So they play at a really slow pace. I believe it's like the 240th slowest pace in the country offensively. They want to slow the game down, turn it into a rock fight. And then as far as, you know, defensively, they're a top five defense in the country. They've been consistent all season long and a really good bet. That's why I liked them in the tournament. I just thought 7.5 was insane against Alabama, just because of the way that they match up. I really like them right now. The only reason, again, I didn't trust them, like, fully to make a Final Four bet or anything like that was just because of the Mountain West. Going into this tournament, the Mountain West, they hadn't won a tournament game in so long. You saw this, you know, this year again, Utah State. I thought that they actually had a shot. They were one of the better three-point shooting teams in the country. Then we get into the tournament, and they go like 2 of 18 from three. Couldn't hit a shot to save their lives. So that's why it's so tough to call with that conference because they don't play a whole lot of defense other than San Diego State. And they bowed out the last couple of years, but I really do like this team, and I like them as a live bet. I actually kind of like them tomorrow as well.
You like them against Creighton?
I think that – you know, I think Creighton's the better team, but right now I like the way that they match up. If they're able to slow the game down, you know, like if it's an under game, if it's a low scoring rock fight, I like San Diego State, but if Creighton's able to get out and transition and make it an up-tempo game, I think they could run away with it. But right now I'm going to stick with San Diego State. I trust them a little bit more just because I think that they have the coaching advantage there too. So I like San Diego State a little bit.
Florida Atlantic, ninth seed against Kansas State. That's today, tonight, this evening. So give me, how do you feel about that when it looks like, with all the upsets, it's like Cinderella against Cinderella, unknown against unknown, even though people who follow this stuff know them. But it just seems like an embarrassment of Hollywood story riches that way. But Florida Atlantic, that you probably weren't surprised by, but other people might be against Kansas State. And what are they doing here anyways?
Yeah, and that's the thing with Florida Atlantic, because they had such a tough first-round matchup. You could make the case for them being a Final Four team, but you could also – a lot of people picked against them. Most people picked against them because they had a terrible first-round matchup against Memphis, which just shows how they've been disrespected all season long. They were misseeded. I mean, you know, they're a 30-plus win team. I get they play in a smaller conference, but they're really good. The problem is right now, you know, kind of rooting for Kansas State as well. Noel, the point guard – that's the one of the best NCAA tournament performances I've ever seen. Obviously, I mean, he set the assist record with 19, scored over 20 points, made huge shots, and he got injured in that game. They had to tape up his ankle. He was hobbling around for a while. it's tough to bet against them, but I worry that they may be gassed in this game. And I wonder what his ankle's going to look like, you know, now that he's sometimes, obviously with a sprained ankle, you know, you could play through the game, then you get home and it's tough to move around. So I want to see what he looks like, because if he's not 100%, I don't think that they could win this game against Florida Atlantic. Because what worried me about Florida Atlantic going against some of these bigger teams, you know, is, okay, if they don't make their shots, they're going to get blown out. And then in that last game, they were like 2 of 14 in the first half from three. They had 9 turnovers. And against Tennessee, the bigger team, they were still only down 5 points because somehow they were beating them, like I said, on the glass. So it's tough to bet against them right now, because even when they're not hitting their shots or scoring the basketball, they're finding different ways to win games. So I'm going to stick with Florida Atlantic in this game. I like them a lot.
Okay, appreciate it. This is nuts. We're talking about an Elite Eight without a number one, and we're talking about Florida Atlantic against Kansas State, and exactly. Creighton could go to play for the championship, and like, oh my God. I appreciate it. Thanks, Ryan. Thanks for your time again.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
All right, Ryan Horvath, BetMGM Tonight co-host. This is nuts. I mean, it just, you know, watch where you put your money. Ryan's trying to help you. He's got ideas for you, but it seems really crazy. Speaking of crazy, we're going to take a break when I come back. Studzinski and meatballs. I mean, he's really gone full meatballs with some of the players the Bears have signed, and it is worth revisiting and worth serving up another edition, of Studzinski and meatballs. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage. Thank you for listening, fellow Suckageers. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.